Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in time for KER Politics. Actually, we're just calling it the KER Report right now. I hope you guys like the new format that we have. It's working very well. I want to say to all the people who come on the blog, I spent, are you ready for this, last weekend, 10 hours answering all your comments. Please continue. Let's have those comments keep coming in. I've got one of my favorite guests on the line right now, Mayor David Rubin from Israel. I'm going to talk with David about a couple of things. Number one, his humanitarian efforts, which are incredibly important. And we're going to talk a little bit about the transition from President Trump into possibly President-elect Biden. David, I wanted to tell you, I received a very, very interesting email this morning from one of my co-supporters of Israel. His name is Pastor Klingish. I get his stuff every day. It's very interesting. He is concerned. He is predicting that relations between Israel and Iran are probably going to worsen under the new administration. I pray to God that's not the case, sir, but I want to start out and I want to ask you that question. How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, we don't have relations with Iran.
I know that. I mean, that was the wrong way to put it. Okay.
I mean, the truth is, we never had relations with Iran, even when the Shah of Iran was in power before
right.
what they call the Islamic Revolution in Iran. But since then, they've been exporting that Islamic Revolution for the past 40 years.
Yep.
And the only relation that we have with Iran is their intent to destroy us.
I guess I should have used a different word.
To wipe us out once they are able to.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
Their intent is to destroy us. Our intent is to defend ourselves.
Correct.
And we have to do it in the best possible way. And so we're in a very tricky situation now, because for the past 4 years we have had very strong cooperation with the Trump administration.
Yep.
In confronting Iran. And the rules of the game were clear. We were working together on several different levels. And it was always understood that if those various levels that with which we were confronting Iran do not work, then we would have other options in which we could work together as well. To truly stop them, and that they would not be allowed to get a nuclear weapon. Those have been the rules of the game. And if a President Biden comes in, then the rules of the game they certainly seem like they're going to change.
Yeah, well, I know exactly where you're coming from. I used the wrong word, David. The word I guess I really want to use is situation. Klingish is predicting that the United States will get re-involved in the treaty with Iran that President Trump pulled out of. I have to say one thing, and that is, I pray to God that is not the case. President Trump, and this is the next subject that I wanted to get into, and I don't want to put you on the spot. You don't have to answer any question, Dave, you don't want to, but I'm under the impression that Donald Trump and his son and the team basically accomplish what I think are some miracles in the Middle East. Number one, moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. I personally, being a Bible scholar of sorts, I personally feel that was a very positive thing to do, number one. Number two, the treaties that the Trump administration was instrumental in putting together in the Middle East are treaties that heretofore have just simply not happened. Trump was the first president that ever managed to put that together. And I have to tell you, I am a big supporter of Israel. I'm also a big supporter of humanity. And I have to say that I think that Trump's actions that he was instrumental in putting together in the Middle East were absolutely miraculous. But that's just Al Corland's opinion. That is definitely not David's opinion. Got a comment on what I just said, sir?
I actually think you made some very good points. You made some excellent points, especially the biblical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
When I travel around the United States, speaking to different groups that many of whom believe in standing with Israel. Very often a question I get asked is, how can we help Israel?
Right.
You know, how can we stand together with Israel? And I always say, you know, standing with Israel isn't just praying for Israel. It's not just praying for peace. It's a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all good things, but it's a lot more than that. I always say, stand with Israel in biblically consistent ways. And what that means is that whatever action you take on behalf of Israel, whatever policy you support that relates to Israel, you make sure that it is biblically consistent. So, for instance, you mentioned moving the American embassy to Jerusalem. Well, anyone who knows his Bible and knows his history, he knows that the capital city of Israel, all the way from the time of King David, was Jerusalem. And we're talking well over 3,000 years. So if that's the capital city of Israel, if Jerusalem is the capital city of Israel, and we understand it from the Bible, then from that history, so any policy taken as it relates to Jerusalem has to stand with that covenant that's very clearly stated in the Bible between God and the Jewish people. So those are actually very important points you made, Al.
Well, I think it's an important point. I mean, you talk about King David. Let's go all the way back to Abraham. I mean, you know, it was anybody who has any, well, I guess I would have to say, non-secular beliefs at all, really has to go along with what I just said. I know an awful lot of born-again Christians. I don't happen to be born again. I was born that way. But I want to say that I don't know a single born-again Christian who disagrees with me. And I also want to say that the Israelis, the Jews, for lack of better terms, are God's chosen people, as stated in the Bible. But I want to get away from that. David, we have to take a break here in about 1 minute. I want to get into one other thing, and that is something I'd like you to think about prior to just during the commercial break. And that is, I want to talk a little bit about what you are doing for children, and that would be the Shiloh Children's Fund. I want to give you as much visibility as I can with the Shiloh Children's Fund. I've got 30 seconds to kill here before we go into a commercial. Just give us a 30-second introduction, and then we'll take a break, sir.
Well, the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund was established. It was established about 19 years ago after a terrible terrorist attack, which I could tell you about after the break.
You know what, I want to hear about that, because it was a terrible attack, and among other things, you and your infant son, I have to say, were very, very lucky to have survived that. Ladies and gentlemen, a quick commercial break. I'm going to be right back with David Rubin. Let me address him correctly, Mayor David Rubin.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Continue on with KER Politics. Going to talk about what David Rubin is doing and his associates are doing for the children of Israel, who are totally defenseless most of the time. You're on, sir.
Well, this, as I started to say before the break, 19 years ago, almost 19 years ago, I was driving back from Jerusalem. I had my three-year-old son with me in the baby seat in the car, and the car was suddenly hit with a massive hail of bullets. The bullets were flying. I got shot in the leg. My son got shot in the head. We had trouble getting away from the terrorists because the car was dead from the bullets hitting. And after several attempts to start the car, finally the car started. And this was while the bullets were flying. Got away from the terrorists, got to an ambulance, and eventually we made it to the hospital in Jerusalem, where I was pronounced the 1,000th victim of terrorism to be hospitalized in that hospital just in that previous year and a half. Well, out of that terrorist attack and out of, you know, the suffering that we had, the trauma, and the months of doctor's visits and operations and post-trauma therapy for my son, what I realized was that the gift, in a sense, as traumatic as it was, as horrible as the whole experience was, a gift had been put in my hands, something that I needed to take and turn into good. You know, we have an expression in Hebrew, Hakol L'tova, which means everything is for good. Doesn't mean that everything happens is good. We know that bad things happen to good people, but it means that everything happens for a good reason. And from that experience, from that terror attack, and from the trauma after the terror attack as well, I decided to start the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund for the purpose of healing the trauma of the terror victim children and restoring some of the lost innocence to their lives through our projects. So what we have at this point, years later, and it took a lot of years to build it up and to first to learn how to do it and then to build it up. And so now we have a therapeutic educational campus where we integrate therapy and education. Over 2,000 children are being treated, are being served there, and we have a variety of formal therapies such as music therapy, art therapy, bibliotherapy, multisensory, safe room therapy, sports therapy, and I think I got all of them. There may be one or two others that I'm missing. But all of those therapies combined with the education, with the informal therapy such as the petting zoo and the horse farm, and all of that is healing the trauma of the terror victim children and rebuilding their lives.
Mayor Rubin, let me ask you a question. Now, we have an awful lot of quote-unquote treaties that have been put into place that were instigated under the Trump administration, United Arab Emirates, and on and on and on. Give me a prediction as to where you think those treaties are going to go. Are they going to be effective in your opinion? And I realize this is putting you on the spot. I realize I did not warn you about that question. But you know what, sir? You're a bright guy. I just want your honest, unadulterated opinion. Are they going to work?
Well, I think they are going to, at least for a while. We're talking about the Islamic world. The Islamic world has always been reluctant to make peace with Israel. But the bottom line is that countries make decisions, in most cases, not based on friendship, not based on values. They make decisions based on common interests. And we certainly don't have the similar values as the Muslim nations, but we do have common interests. One of those common interests is to stand firm against Iran. Okay, there are defense interests, strategic interests. And those interests have become stronger and stronger over time as the Iranian regime supports the terrorist organizations, as the Iranian regime threatens its neighbors, and as the Iranian regime continues its mad race for a nuclear bomb. So that's the situation. And these countries, like the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, and yes, Saudi Arabia, even though they haven't officially joined any sort of peace arrangement with Israel officially, and of course Sudan. So these countries have come to the realization that it's better to work with Israel rather than against Israel.
Well, I'm glad to see that's finally happening. We got about 2 minutes left here, sir, actually about a minute left here. And I want to give my opinion on one thing, and then I'd just like you to very briefly either join me or not join me. It doesn't matter. I think the greatest friend in terms of an American politician that Israel has had, and I would have to say in my lifetime, and I go back to 1943, boss, I think Trump is absolutely amazing as to what he has done in terms of clearing the air in terms of relations in the entire Middle East. Got an opinion on that, David?
Well, I think that President Trump has been the best president in terms of U.S.-Israel relations of any president in American history. And certainly in the modern history of the modern state of Israel.
Yep.
So yes, I mean, his accomplishments are enormous, and I believe that these are heartfelt accomplishments. I also believe that they're accomplishments based on the common interests of Israel and the United States. So,
well, I'm going to take it one step farther, David.
I think he deserves all the praise.
Yeah, I'm going to take it one step further, though, and I firmly believe this. And I'm not a pessimist. I'm just a guy who understands human nature and who cares about my fellow human being. I think he's the only president that has realized that the future of the world, if the world is to become more sophisticated and more productive, the Middle East needs to work together. Animosities need to go away, if that's even possible. I know they're historically very, very deep, but the fact of the matter is when people work together, good things result. And that's what's happening with the work that you're doing for the children. Mayor Rubin, thank you so much, sir.
Well, thank you, Al. It was good to be with you.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Time for the second half of KER. No more politics. Now it's called KER. I'm going to devote the entire second half of the show to discussion with perhaps one of my best friends, Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. We're going to talk a little bit about the conventional markets. We're going to talk about what we think people have to look forward to if, in fact, President-elect Biden becomes President Biden. I, by the way, at this point in time, just a personal opinion, Doc may not share it, and it really is irrelevant, and that is that I don't think Biden's going to get to become President Biden. Since we've got Sidney Powell on the offense against the Democrats, I know quite a bit about Sidney Powell. I read her book, License to Lie. I would not want to be an enemy of hers. Doc, rather than opine on that, I want to talk a little bit about the markets. Now, on Thursday, the Dow superseded the $30,000 level, which is the first time in history, obviously. Trump took a bit of credit for that, and I think that that credit was probably deserved. I think I would have to say that I disagree with people saying the market has been very strong because of people knowledgeable of the fact that Trump is no longer going to be president. What are you looking for? And I don't want any political opinions from you at all. I want to know about the market. I happen to be very, very invested into the in the conventional markets right now. Before, I was very, very invested in the junior resource market. I plan to go back into that. But let's talk about the conventional market first. Doc, what do you think? Positive, negative, or indifferent for 2021?
I think for 2021, I think I'm going to be negative. I think the rest of the year, you know, we're going to have a good field rally. I don't think we have a lot more on the upside, but I think it pulls back then. And I think January is going to be a very important month for this market. And as far as it being Trump's market, it absolutely is his market because he made some significant changes globally for this country as far as his trade policies and as far as his undoing the NAFTA and his deals that he's made around the world to bring jobs back to the United States. That is significant. And by closing down the border, I think that's significant, and because it gives a leg up for the unskilled worker in this country. Everything he's done has really been America first, and I think if he remains president, the odds are pretty good he may be able to do a lot more. But the difficulty here, in my opinion, is money printing. The markets, you can get asset appreciation only for so long until you're going to have a blow off. And it's hard to say when that's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's 2021, regardless of whoever is president.
You know, look, I just want to make one opinion on that. I have been in your corner for a long time, but being the gold bug that I was beginning in roughly 2000, that was 2021 years ago, I was a big-time investor in the resource market. I was a big-time advocate of gold. I spoke at the GATA convention in Washington, D.C., et cetera, et cetera. Now, the one thing that I want to say is since I retired from talking about markets on this particular program, which is over and done with, by the way, I will be continuing to talk about markets in the future. But since I retired, I just threw my hands up in the air and gave all of our money to Wells Fargo and said, do what you will. I don't want to even worry about it anymore. We have not done all that well, but we also haven't done all that poorly in terms of the conventional markets heretofore. We're down probably, I'd say probably 10 to 15%. And I consider that over the past couple of years, year, whatever, I consider that to be okay in terms of the conventional markets. I'd like you to opine on that if you would, Doc.
Yeah, and the problem with the conventional markets, Al, is the damage that's being done in this country from the COVID restrictions and some of those sectors that are really getting hit hard. And we've had a bounce back, and the question is, what happens when we get back to what some people call normalcy, which in my opinion won't happen until the second half of next year. And I think the virus may peter out by itself, even though they'll have vaccinations and attribute it to the vaccinations. But you're not going to see it before the first half of next year. Because it's going to take a while for them to get the vaccinations up and running. Now, having said that, I'm going forward very positive on the resource sector, and gold and silver going forward. And I say this based on the unquenchable need in the future to print money, whether it's fiscally or monetarily, and they're going to keep interest rates down. There is no way they can change policy dramatically to try to become fiscally responsible. It would be catastrophic, not only for this country, but the globe. And having said that as well, is if they're going to be printing money, when you look at the gold to monetary base ratio, it's never been lower. And it's right at the bottom of the graph as it relates to 100 years, and it's going to have to catch up. And that's why, in my opinion, gold is still the place to be going forward. I think it's going to outperform the conventional markets, which it has been for a number of years, until people become fiscally responsible again.
I don't know about that fiscal responsibility concept. The reason I say that is I have been a big player in the precious metals markets, quite frankly, since about 1999. I've been tooting my horn, basically talking about the debt situation in the United States. The debt situation in the U.S., regardless of where the markets are right now, is even almost worse than it was back at the turn of the century. Consumer debt is huge, and the government debt is basically, as of the last quarter, is at an all-time high. When do you think, Doc, people are going to wise up and realize that the emperor isn't wearing any clothes? Got to warn you about one thing. We've only got about a minute left here before we have to take a commercial break. Dr. Postma, go ahead.
Well, the problem is most people are clueless, Al, and they always have been clueless, and they will remain clueless as regards a monetary policy in this country. And they'll get a clue when the dollar decelerates and it actually plunges. That's when they're going to get a clue. And when we finally have the ravages of inflation, which will happen again, but nobody knows when, and that's what's going to really tell the story.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, my opinion on that, and then we're going to take a real quick commercial break, and we're going to get back to the doctor is in. Let me just say this. I think the thing that the U.S. economy needs to be afraid of is the fact that China is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. The numbers for Chinese GDP growth in the most recent period were not all that bad. They were not negative as they have been occasionally in the U.S. Ladies and gentlemen, the gal's going to be right back with Dr. Richard Postma. We're going to continue talking about conventional markets. Would I get your opinions on this also, by the way? Stick around. Hey, Doc, before we start the second half, the final segment of KER Politics, I don't know if you and Corey ever talked about this, but, you know, you're pretty skookum when it comes to investing. You're pretty skookum when it comes to what to invest in. Your timing is excellent. How did you get involved? I mean, come on, man, you're a doctor. How did you get involved in something like this, particularly the resource sector?
It's always intrigued me, Al, and I always figured that if somebody took the time to study and look at all this stuff, one can use their brain to make money instead of have to work like a dog all the time.
Ain't that the truth? That's what this program has been all about since I started in 1995. Yeah. And I know Corey is doing an excellent job taking over the financial aspects of the show, but I'm back in that particular saddle again, at least part-time. Doc, having said that, I noticed yesterday, you and I are recording this on Friday, so yesterday was Thursday. I was looking at the charts, starting to look at the gold charts again. I was looking at the charts last night in the evening, and I noticed the gold took a bit of it was not appreciating as it has in the past, and now we're talking Thursday night. What's going on, sir?
Well, what's going on, Al, is, you know, I think that we haven't had that promised stimulus again, that second stimulus that was supposed to go our way. And I think the gold market is a little bit disappointed with that. That's number one. And number two, all the speculators seem to be moving toward Bitcoin or the cryptocurrencies. And I think that's another reason. Plus, with the money printing, a lot of the money is going to risk on assets again in the general market. So gold is just another afterthought. But the positive for gold is I think a lot of these companies are getting their act together, and you're getting mergers and acquisitions, and you're starting to really thin out this market in a lot of ways. And I think with time, we're going to see another spike in gold. It's only a matter of time when reality starts to hit people again, when they realize that there's no way out of the dilemma we're in and the debt we're in globally and domestically. And the only way you can keep this thing going is just by ever more money printing, because you got to print even more money to get just a tenth of an increase in GDP. And that has been accelerating since the 1990s, how much money it takes to increase your GDP. And so it's never ending, and nobody dares pull a plug on this thing. And so the only way out is actually some fiscal responsibility and growth. And that growth is not real growth.
No, of course it's not. Now, I'm looking at the 24-hour gold chart today, thanks to GoldSeek, or SilverSeek, and GoldSeek, by the way. And I want to say the couple of spikes in the last 24 hours, it hit 1815. It hit about 1817 also. Now it's back down to 1805. And so you think that the rationale that you just gave is the reason gold is acting that way today, Friday?
Yes, I do. And I think we're not going to see, and I think we're bottoming out now in gold. I think as we move into December, we'll be doing bottoming, and I think the odds are very strong that then we get a good run in January again. Whether that a run is that we move toward the highs, that's going to be questionable, and really I can only tell that when I look at technicals when we're getting that run.
Well, I got to tell you, Doctor, I'm going to be bugging you quite a bit in terms of technical factors in the next few weeks, because you're going to be back on the show in spades, at least in my particular segment. What I want to say, by the way, Doc, is I really, really am going to start looking at companies right now. I was involved in due diligence work when I was doing our registration statements for small resource companies. Just a bit of an interesting aside on that one, by the way. According to the SEC, our company did more voluntary registrations than any other organization of its type in the world. That was kind of a good business for us. Now, when I look at a company I'm going to invest in, I look very simply at a couple of things. First thing I look at is the people. If I don't know the management personally, I will not invest in it. Secondly, I listen to people like Rick Rule. I look at what Sprott USA is investing in. I look at why they're investing in it. And then I say, you know, I'm probably going to go with that. But when you talk about technicals, I mean, you always have to look at, you know, the old saw of how much capital do they have? What does their real asset base actually look like in terms of not inferred but proven results, et cetera, et cetera? What I would like to know, Doc, is what do you look at before you invest in a company?
Well, pretty much what you said, Alex. Number one is management and proven management. And management that has a record that you can look at, and that's consistent. That's, you know, number one. And then after that, you've got to look at the economics and the fundamentals. And, of course, we know there are all kinds of variations of that as regards the companies. But top on my list is mm-hmm. the management of the company, just like you said, because if you've got management that's been a failure, you can bet, and it's been consistent with certain companies, and they're around in the resource center. You know their odds of doing well in another company are not that great, but you got to go with management.
I think management is the real key to the whole deal. By the way, just one thing I want to throw in here, and that is, in the interest of full disclosure, since I am a principal, obviously, in this particular show, whenever I buy a stock or sell a stock that I have control over, and when I say I have control, that means one that I personally invest in through TD Ameritrade, I will give you 3 days' notice before I buy it and 3 days' notice before I sell it. You know, I got to tell you what this guy, Dr. Postma, has to say about the resource sector is second to none. He should be considered to be up there right with all of the experts. I mean, I hate to say it, but this guy really, really knows what he's talking about. Let's get off on a different subject, but it definitely includes the market and not politics. So you are somewhat bearish in terms of the conventional market going into 2021. Is that correct, Doc? At least for the second half of the year. Is that correct? And if so, give me some reasons.
Yeah, because, Al, number one, the damage that's been done to the globe with this COVID lockdown and restrictions, that's number one. There have been small businesses and companies that have been wiped out just all over this globe. And not only is that a problem, but these people that have owned these companies, they certainly aren't going to contribute to any big move in the stock market. And when we get back to what is called normalcy, the damage that's been done is so great that you're going to get a recovery because there's going to be pent-up demand. But after that, what do you have left? Now, you did mention about China, and we've let the cat out of the bag with China. That was done a number of years ago when actually we were the ones that allowed them to become eminent in this world. You're not going to put that genie back anymore, and China is going to become a significant player. As much as Trump is trying to blunt them, I don't think you can blunt them in the way that you would like to, that they're a second-rate player. Just from a population alone, they're going to continue to grow. And I think they're going to become the major player in the world as far as in the future is concerned. I think our star has dimmed. I think we've shot ourselves in the foot, and it's going to be very difficult to continue at the high level we have been in the world in the past. And eventually, the reserve currency status that we have, that's going to decrease with time. In fact, trade in the dollar continues to drop. Although
I agree, Doc. I got to interrupt you. We're out of time. I happen to agree with you 100%.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.